Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
Active coronavirus cases are at a record high, but health officials say hospitalizations aren't rising. Czech officials have condemned a violent police crackdown in Belarus against peaceful protesters. And a treasure trove of 14th century gold and silver coins is found near Kladruby Monastery in Bohemia. Sunday's rise in the number of coronavirus cases is the lowest in the past 2 weeks, at just 122, according to the health ministry, which noted that fewer tests are conducted on weekends. The number of current cases now stands at a record high of 5,081. However, the country's main hygiene officer said the situation is not alarming because the number of people hospitalized with COVID-19 is not increasing. Meanwhile, the Czech Federation of Cities and Towns has criticized the government's coronavirus crisis management, saying it failed to inform about infections on the local level and cut some funding without warning. The federation wants to have its own representative on the new coronavirus crisis team. Czech politicians and officials have condemned the violent crackdown by Belarusian police against peaceful protesters in the capital, Minsk, following polls showing Alexander Lukashenko had been re-elected to a sixth term as president. The Czech Ministry of Foreign Affairs also said the elections in Belarus could not be deemed free and democratic, given the arrests of potential and running candidates, as well as the fact that the OSCE election observation mission was not allowed to fully perform its functions. Later on Monday, President Lukashenko said that the protests had been organized from the Czech Republic, Poland, and Britain. Minister of Regional Development Klára Dostálová will suggest that the state offer financial support for Czech tour guides, whose revenues have fallen some 90% on average during the coronavirus pandemic. The deferral of social and health insurance payments for self-employed people ends in September. Without state support, most tour guides will be unable to support themselves, the Association of Guides said in an earlier press release. Police have charged a 54-year-old man with arson and murder in connection with a fire on Saturday in Bohumín, northern Moravia, that claimed 11 lives. The man is reportedly the ex-partner of a woman who died in the blaze along with her family. The fire broke out on the 11th floor of a 13th-story apartment building on Saturday. Three adults and three children perished in the flames, while another five people jumped to their deaths from the 12th floor. Four panels in an open-air Prague exhibition dedicated to the anti-communist politician Milada Horáková, executed 70 years ago following a show trial, were destroyed on Sunday night. Horáková was a democratic politician in Masaryk's First Republic and a resistance figure during the war. She was the only female political prisoner executed by the communist regime. The exhibition was prepared by the Kampa Museum near the Vltava River. The Museum of West Bohemia in Pilsen has announced that a treasure trove of hundreds of gold and silver coins from the 14th century was found in a forest near the Kladruby Monastery in the Tachov region. The museum said it will present the find to journalists on Wednesday. Among the coins are ducats bearing the image of Charles IV, Albrecht of Austria, Rupert of the Palatinate, and from the Hanseatic city of Lübeck, as well as silver groschen of Wenceslaus II, John of Luxembourg, and Charles IV. And finally, the weather. Heavy thunderstorms are due to hit much of Bohemia, Vysočina, and southern Moravia on Tuesday, with torrential rain warnings in some localities. Daytime highs should range between 25 to 28 degrees Celsius. I'm Brian Kennedy, and that's the Czech news for now.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio, with me, Ruth Franková. Coming up in today's program, the U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is set to lay a wreath at the Thanks America Monument in Plzeň. The number of applications to foster children in the Czech Republic is falling dramatically. And later we speak to Czech movie star Anna Geislerová about her performance as Olga Havlová in the new film Havel. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Plzeň is gearing up for the arrival of U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo on Tuesday. The West Bohemian city was freed by the U.S. Army on the 6th of May 1945, and Mr. Pompeo is set to lay a wreath at its Thanks America monument 3 months after COVID-19 curtailed events marking the 75th anniversary of liberation. Ian Willoughby has the details.
A band plays the Star-Spangled Banner in Pilsen at a previous liberation festival. When the West Bohemian city celebrates the anniversary of the arrival of the U.S. Army on May 6, 1945. Jana Komisheva of Pilsen City Hall outlines what normally happens at that time of year.
Usually it's a festival lasting several days. We present historical military machinery at special camps in coordination with the Military History Club. There are also memorials and a very rich program of arts events. The most important date for us here in Plzeň at this time is usually the 6th of May, when Plzeň was liberated by General Patton's U.S. Third Army in 1945. The main memorial event takes place at the monument Thanks America on the 6th of May.
This year's Liberation Festival, marking the 75th anniversary of the arrival of U.S. troops, should have been a big one. However, the coronavirus situation put paid to that. A visit by U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was postponed, and instead of a huge gathering in the streets, the dramatic events of 1945 were remembered via a virtual studio. Now, however, Mr. Pompeo is coming to Pilsen at the start of a visit to the Czech Republic, where he'll meet the country's top politicians. While in the West Bohemian city on Tuesday afternoon, Mr. Pompeo will speak and lay a wreath at the Thanks America monument and hold talks with his Czech counterpart, Tomáš Petříček. Local official Jana Komisheva says there is great excitement in Pilsen ahead of Tuesday's events.
It is of course a great honor for Plzeň and we are really touched. I think it's also a great joy and honor for U.S. veterans who will see that it is thanks to them that West Bohemia was liberated and that their own Secretary of State has come to pay tribute at our memorial. And for us, the fact that the U.S. Secretary of State has chosen Plzeň as the venue for his meeting with the Czech Foreign Minister is also a great honor.
While in the West Bohemian city, Mr. Pompeo will also visit the Patton Memorial Pilsen, which was opened on the 60th anniversary of liberation in 2005, and Pilsenský Prazdroj, the country's most famous brewery and home of the lager Pilsner Urquell. On Wednesday, he's due to have meetings in Prague with Prime Minister Andrej Babiš and President Miloš Zeman, as well as delivering an address at the Czech Senate.
Ian Willoughby with that report. The number of applications to foster children in the Czech Republic has seen a dramatic decrease. Meanwhile, the number of children being sent to orphanages is on the rise. The government has approved a new amendment that would increase state support for foster parents. However, NGOs say it is too little to reverse the trend. Tom McEncrow has the story.
More than 1,000 children are sent to orphanages in the Czech Republic every year, a quarter of them under the age of 4. But life in such a home provides nowhere near the emotional support that a child can receive in a foster family, says Magdalena Zemanová, the spokeswoman for the Association of Surrogate Families, a Czech NGO made up of foster and adoptive parents.
In an orphanage, the lady that takes care of the child goes home after her shift is over, whereas in a foster care family, the child has its own home. It can share all of its concerns and the foster parents help. Therefore, the social skills of a child who reaches adulthood after growing up in a foster family are massive compared to one who grew up in an orphanage.
From the early to mid-2010s, the number of children in Czech orphanages declined from 7,878 in 2010 to 6,345 in 2018. However, over the past 2 years, this number has started rising again. At the same time, since 2013, foster care applications have gone down by no less than two-thirds, according to the Ministry of Labour and Social Affairs statistics. Ms. Zimanova, who is fostering five children with her husband, says a lot changed in 2013, when an amendment to the Act on the Social and Legal Protection of Children came into effect. It made foster care more professional, but also far harder.
It is no longer sufficient today to apply and just want to bring up the child. One has to contact the biological family and take the children on prison visits. Both foster parents have to take courses, which can be difficult for the husband, for example, as he has to take leave off work to do so. This is not necessarily wrong per se. However, with so many extra familial visits and tasks, it is not a completely normal childhood. I think that for a lot of families who are considering sending an application for foster care, it is simply too much.
Those families who do foster children receive a financial contribution from the state. However, this is below the minimum wage and, according to Ms. Zimanova, is too low to have an effect on many families. The financial constraints also contribute to the fact that children with disabilities or minority backgrounds are rarely selected for extra institutional care, she says. The current government has proposed a new amendment to the legislation, which has been sent to the Chamber of Deputies. However, the Child and Family Association, which is made up of 83 organisations operating in the field of care for vulnerable children, criticised the amendment in an open letter in June. It included five counter-proposals, among them the setting of a minimum age limit for children who are sent to orphanages, as well as raising financial contributions so they are equal to the minimum wage. However, the biggest problem, says Ms. Zimanova, is the often insensitive bureaucratic state control over foster care, under which foster families are not sufficiently consulted, and problems arise that could be avoided through a more inclusive process.
Tom McEncrow with that report. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague International. One of the most talked about movies of the year in this country has been Havel, which explores decades in the life of Václav Havel. One of the standout performers in the film is actress Anna Geislerová, and she's Ian Willoughby's guest now in this edition of One on One.
Vždycky jsi byla moje první dáma.
For decades, one of the country's top movie stars, Anna Geislerová, has recently won plaudits for her role as Václav Havel's wife Olga in the biopic Havel. The film depicts the future president's struggles in the descent under the communist regime, as well as bringing to life Havel's sometimes unconventional relationship with Olga. I spoke to Geislerová about playing Olga Havlova, her own encounters with the Havels, and far more at our studio last week. You were studying about Václav Havel before you were even offered the role. Why were you studying Havel?
Well, because I'm a big admirer of Havel. But, you know, through the years it becomes some sort of like you just keep saying it and it's not connected to real knowledge. So I thought I should maybe refresh, because I used to read all the plays and, you know, and the big speeches and everything. And then, you know, many books were written about him. So I just thought I should, you know, refresh.
Was there anything that surprised you or that you learned from those books?
There was one big thing for me that I didn't know, which maybe many people didn't know, and which I was happy that I found in the script when I, you know, later got the script of film Havel. And it's his so-called signed collaboration with the political regime, which he really regretted. And I didn't know that. And I was surprised.
You met Havel a few times. Where did you meet him and what impression did he make on you?
Well, I can't really say, you know, or talk about some big meeting or talk or anything, because he was close to people. He was very friendly and open and talkative to everyone. So it wasn't so unusual to meet him, you know, at parties and the film premieres, you know, in the gallery. So from time to time, I, you know, occasionally met him and had a chance to talk to him a little bit. He was, you know, we all admired him. We all, you know, look up to him. But when you talk to him, it was very common, very nice, very quiet, very, like when you, but you know, it's when you talk to someone who you really admire and he's a politician or artist. And so it's that kind of silly talk sometimes.
What about Olga? Did you ever encounter her?
In one of occasions like this, I think it was the opening of one film in 90s, and she was there, and I think she was the one who really wanted to leave, and he wasn't the one who wanted to leave. And we were talking with him, and she was standing behind, and I think she was just like, oh, please leave him, leave us, and let us go home.
Well, many years later, of course, you were offered the role of Olga Havlova in the film Havel. What was the attraction of playing her?
Immediate. I really had no doubts when I read the script, which I really liked. And also because of that moment that I realized before, like that I talked about before, that it was in the script. Like, we are not painting everything to look great. He really failed more himself than anybody else. So I liked it. I was happy that I found it in the script. And so I just said yes, and I don't know, then she's enigmatic, and it's hard to play people like that because you have to keep it inside and not get too boring.
And also it's harder, I guess, if it's a real person who was living not many years ago and is known to essentially the whole nation.
It is, but I think, you know, her natural modesty helped, because when you start to search, there is some documentary about her, but just one, I guess. And then some about Havel, and she's part of it. But you don't find many, like, camera interviews or videos. She was really humble, and she absolutely preferred to stay behind. So she has given some written interviews, but you can't really study her because she's nowhere. So that helps, because we all remember her as a, you know, iconic dignity. She was very, like, you know,
dignified
person, and there's not many things that you can really take, you know, to use. Some people knew, and I didn't. Also, what I didn't about her is she had this. She lost
some fingers. I didn't know
fingers.
That either.
Yeah, yes, because she worked in a factory, and you know, some machine cut the fingers off, and so her whole life she was hiding the hand. She was using some handkerchiefs and stuff like that. But I didn't know. So, but many people didn't know. So you have one very good detail, but most of the people didn't know. So if you just look in the movie, I keep my hand like that, but nobody knows why.
In the film, Olga Havlova is always spoken about as being this strong woman, this tough character from working class Shishkov. But some people watching the film may say, if she was so strong, why did she tolerate a husband who was A, unfaithful, and B, at least according to the film, really indecisive?
My experience in life is also when you really meet someone who presents himself as a tough and strong and everything, is very often very soft, sensitive, and fragile inside. And, you know, it's a person that builds, you know, the walls around him to protect himself. And I think she was like that, because inside, I think she was very sensitive, very empathic. She understood people very well. And I think the thing about them, everybody says he was unfaithful to her, but she also has had her life, her lovers, her stories. I think they were perfect to each other. That's the thing. Like, they made their life to work for them. You know, they just decided to live, so-called living the truth. And it means, like, I met someone, I'm with him, are you okay? Yes, okay, I have someone. So I think they knew why they are staying together.
It worked for
them. There were no conditions like, you know, like we common people would, you know, say, like, we're faithful, stay at home, no drinking, no. And it was different. They were different people, and they were very authentic to their lives.
Also, I guess there were very intense times. One thing that, for me, the film really brings across is the pressure, the incredible pressure that the dissidents came under from the communists. Was there any moment when you were making the film where you got a strong sense of the sheer brutality of the communists?
There's a scene like where there's a, like a concert of the underground band, and you know, which is really beaten up by the police, and it's really brutal, and that really felt horrible. Like, if you just imagine, like, you want to just see a band play, and then You end up in a prison, beaten up, and then maybe sentenced for a year or two. That's brutal. And then also, like, when you imagine that you are watched all the time, like that you really have people sitting in front of your house, that you are followed by cars and, you know, the secret police. That must have been horrible. But I keep reading about it, all the, you know, people like Pavel Juráček and Martin Jirós, and you can see it was a really strong community, really strong. They all lived very authentically, I would say. Compared to them, we are very boring people. We are just like, you know, some kids, you know, trying to pretend that they are really living tough life, but we are not. We are just, you know, I don't know the word.
And they were big characters, a lot of these people you're speaking about.
And they keep reading and writing, and they were so active in many things, and they were very educated and, you know, philosophical and truthful.
On a lighter note, there's a lot of smoke in the film. I know you guys were smoking some kind of fake cigarettes or something, but even still, was it difficult?
Yes, it was very difficult for me. I'm a non-smoker since, I don't know, for almost 14 years. And this lady just brought it back into my life, because from that shooting, from time to time, when someone has really slim cigarettes, I just take it because I, you know, kind of liked it when we were shooting. But on a set, it was horrible because you have to go like 20 times. You really have to smoke like smokers do. You cannot fake it. And yeah, we were sick.
Viktor Dvořák, who plays Havel, it's amazing how much he looks like Havel. Maybe this is a dumb question, but did his extreme resemblance to Havel in any way influence how you acted opposite him?
No, I think it's not the way he looks. Just it's the thing, that how he did it and how he appeared. But sometimes I blurred my eyes and I really saw Havel, especially in the older, you know, when like Havel was older, so the mask was amazing. And he really, really looked like him. But I think Viktor just, he felt like Havel. He really did a great job.
One thing I'm curious about is, obviously, since the film came out, a lot of people who knew the Havels have seen it. Have you heard any reactions from them?
From the family?
Or friends?
Or friends. Not especially from his brother, Ivan. No, I didn't. But I myself haven't seen the film yet. I'm saving it. Sometimes I do it. I don't want to watch it, not at the opening, not before, but I will go to the cinema by myself. And I'm collecting the nice things that people said from people connected to the Václav and Olga. My big help in the preparation was Anna Freimanova, who was a secretary of them. And she said, yes, okay.
So she gave you her approval.
Yes. She said it's hard for them. That she said it's not film for us whom we knew them. So you can't really approve. But she said it's great that the film is made and it's very important. And then she wrote me that her husband, Andrej Krop, which they were friends and neighbors, na Hrádečku, said Olga dobrá, like Olga good. And she said, you should be happy because he never says anything is nice. So that I really kept in my heart. And also, I know that Marta Kubišová have seen the film. And a friend of mine sent me a message like that. She said, okay, and that she thinks that Olga wouldn't be offended or something like that. But I think it's great.
You lived through the 90s as a teenager and then a young woman in this country. When Havel represented a lot of ideals for a lot of people, including foreigners like me, who, I can't say it's a reason that I came here, but I knew him before I came here, and this was a positive thing about this country. How do you think Czech society got from that point to today,
this point,
where you have so many people hate Václav Havel, people like you who support him are called Havloid, as if admiring Václav Havel is something terrible?
I don't know how it happened. I don't know. When I, you know, look towards the castle, I don't know, when you when you would just put two pictures of the two presidents, you know, it's just, I don't know, we kind of lost it. I don't know how, but, you know, we still have to accept that it's democracy. That speaks about us as a nation, about the powers that influence, you know, people. Like before we wanted freedom, we got the freedom, then we were more orientated on economics, and then you get frustrated, and then you're trying to just get out of it somehow, and yet we have this, you know, democratically elected president and government, and we have to wait until another generation will, you know, want to leave it behind. So, and I hope it's soon. But it's strange, it's really strange.
From what I can see, the Václav Havel Library is supporting the film. Do you think this film could do anything to, in a sense, promote Havel, to introduce him to younger people, or will it simply just appeal to people who were previously fans of Havel, so to speak?
I think it will get Havel to a different kind of audience than just the supporters, because I think the story is a little bit made for people, like, just come and see the story, not like come and cry over Havel. It even says it's a story based on Havel's life, so it's a little bit more a genre movie. So I think that could get, you know, young people and maybe even the people that hate him, because, you know, they might just like want to see, you know,
see the weak Havel.
Yes. So I think it's just great moment to get out with this movie.
And what's next for you, Anna? I understand you're also playing Bozhena Nemtsova.
Yes. Yeah, but it's already finished. We shot it in the same time. So I was switching between Bozhena and Olga, which was quite hard. And right now I'm going this weekend I'm going to Uherské Hradiště, to film school, and we are presenting Havel and Bozhena. And that's funny, you know, these strong women are now traveling with me and I'm traveling with them. And I'm going to do a film in autumn. It's a beautiful period time, a movie called Sluška, The Servant.
Is that one set in Vienna?
Yes.
As I was reading about it.
Yeah, that's such a great script and great character for me. Then I should do a romantic comedy, Christmas comedy. And it's funny because when I hear myself now talking here in radio English, I'm sorry, everyone. But just yesterday, to my big surprise, I shot a commercial for a Czech car company, but in UK, and I did it in English, which was very funny, really funny. I would say it as I did, but you know, it would be, you know, inappropriate to say the name of the car.
I think people can guess.
But it was amazing. I said, why are you choosing this Czech accent? Well, because it's funny, it's nice. So that's my last project.
Actress Anna Geislerová was Ian Willoughby's guest in this edition of One on One. And I'm afraid this brings us to the end of our programme here on Radio Prague International. If you have any comments about the programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franková. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.